Good evening. You're listening to The Hour of the Time, and I'm Michelle. Tonight, we reach the fourth and final installment of our special holiday presentation of the Carols and Customs of Christmas. In spite of the fact that we will have spent 4 hours on this subject, we've only made a tiny dent in the research material available to those interested in pursuing this history in even greater depth and detail. The following reference materials were used in the preparation of these 4 episodes of The Hour of the Time and are highly recommended. The Story of the Carol by Edmondson Duncan. Christmas is Carols, Customs, and Legends by Ruth Heller. The Oxford Book of Carols by Percy Dearmer, Ralph Vaughan Williams, and Martin Shaw. A Book of Carols by Haig and Regina Shakerjian. Noel's, A New Collection of Old Carols by Marx and Anne Oberndorfer. Sing for Christmas by Opal Wheeler. The Joy of Christmas by Edwin Heath. On Christmas Day by Mervyn Horder. The Christmas Revels Songbook by Nancy and John Langstaff. A Round of Carols by T. Tertius Noble. Jesus Christ, Our Promised Seed by Victor Paul Weirwill. Light Through an Eastern Window by Bishop K. C. Pillai. Babylon Mystery Religion, Ancient and Modern by Ralph Woodrow. Kings and Queens of England by Jane Murray. Mythology by Edith Hamilton. The Message of the Sphinx by Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall. Santa Claus, A Dossier by Paul Froiland, and The King James Version of the Holy Bible. I am sure that some of you received, or will receive, holiday gifts that you don't intend to keep. Sweaters that don't fit, ties you won't wear, house shoes that aren't warm, items you already have, gifts you don't want, or perhaps even gifts you don't like. This is why the day after Christmas is one of the biggest shopping days of the year. Not only are all of the Christmas specialty items marked down about 75%, but it is also the great day of gift exchanges. Woe to the person who doesn't have a sales receipt. Plan ahead for these things. Ask your relatives to always include a receipt with every gift they give you, just in case, and whenever possible, trade that unwanted or useless gift back to the store for Federal Reserve notes. You know what to do. Transform those greenbacks into real money. Gold, silver, or platinum. And whenever possible, encourage your friends and loved ones to give you the gift that really shows they care. Precious metals. The one gift that is always valuable, always fits, and never needs ironing.
Thank you.
For the benefit of younger listeners who may now be scratching their heads, what you just heard was The March of the Toys by Victor Herbert from Babes in Toyland. Having discussed in the previous installment of Carols and Customs of Christmas the pagan origin of gift-giving at the time of the winter solstice, this brings us to that most commercialized of all Christmas characters, Santa Claus. In many countries, including America, Santa Claus is the one who brings gifts. Many people do not know that the legend of Santa Claus originated in St. Nicholas, a person who actually lived. But we will get to the details of his life, both documented and legendary, in a moment. First, let's review his different incarnations around the world. Around the year 1000, the legends of St. Nicholas were brought to Russia from Constantinople by the ruler Vladimir, and soon Nicholas became the patron saint of Russia. His fame also spread to the Lapps and Samoyeds, and perhaps from these people has come the story of the use of the reindeer by Santa Claus. The Dutch brought the legends of St. Nicholas to the New World. In America, the name St. Nicholas became Santa Nicholas, and eventually Santa Claus. Santa Claus was far from being the only gift giver to descend down a chimney to invade the homes of unsuspecting laymen. One story associates this custom with the early German goddess Hertha, a goddess of domesticity, also known as the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God. This goddess of many trades was believed to descend the chimney through the smoke and guide the tellers of the fortunes. At one time, the Germans baked cakes in the form of a slipper, which was supposed to be that of Hertha. These were filled with gifts for the children. In later times, it became the custom to clean the chimney at the beginning of New Year so that good luck could enter the household. In Germany, on St. Nicholas Day, December the 6th, an impersonator of the good saint went about giving gifts to the good children and a touch of the switch to the bad ones. Because his day was so near the Feast of the Nativity, the St. Nicholas custom gradually became associated with Christmas. Martin Luther felt that this idea was becoming too important to the German people and was excluding the central idea of the birth of Christ. Luther introduced the idea of Christkind, now known as Kris Kringle. The Christkind, a female holiday character created in the imagination of and by means of the influence of Martin Luther, was supposed to be the messenger of Jesus. Sometimes she was accompanied by St. Nicholas or Knecht Ruprecht, who questioned the children about their behavior during the past year. In Holland and in Belgium, St. Nicholas, or Sinterklaas, brought gifts to the good children and switches to the bad. The Dutch children believed that Sinterklaas comes from Spain in a boat filled with gifts and is accompanied by a small Moorish servant named Black Pieter. The Dutch incarnation of St. Nicholas is dressed in his bishop's robes and rides a beautiful snow-white horse. The children place their shoes before the fireplace where he can find them, and in them they put hay for his horse. The Santa Claus legend recrossed the ocean from America back to Europe and was gradually adopted in one country after another. Santa Claus did not always supplant other gift givers, such as the wise men, who are still the bringers of gifts in certain countries. And in some instances, he never caught on at all, and a creature of much more ancient pagan origin fills in the night shift for Santa on Christmas Eve in those countries. In Sweden, late in the evening of Christmas Eve, a feast is held. Jul Tomte, the Swedish version of Santa Claus, comes to distribute gifts. He is graciously invited to partake with the family of the feast. In some rural districts of Sweden, it was believed that Jul Tomte was the good spirit of the house who watched over the crops, animals, and farm buildings all year long. On Christmas Eve, a special dish was placed for him so he could eat and watch the merrymaking in secret. In Denmark and in Norway, it is Jul Nissen who brings the gifts. He is a mischievous elf who supposedly lives in the attic or stable all year and makes his appearances only at Christmas. For some reason, he is said to be a special friend of the cat, and comes riding at midnight on Yulbukan, a goat. He wears long white whiskers and a pointed cap. He comes into the house on the goat during the Christmas Eve festivities and capers around the room while all the little children scamper to keep from being bumped. Finally, he leaps out the door and is gone. In France, some believe it is the Christ child who brings the gifts, while others look to Bonhomme Noël, Father Christmas, or the good spirit of Christmas. The children place their shoes by the fireplace to be filled. Additionally, on Christmas Eve, the house cat is always well fed, since for some unknown reason it is considered bad luck if the cat cries on the sacred night. In Switzerland, Father Christmas and Mother Christmas bring the gifts. At one time, it was believed that these gifts were brought by a beautiful angel who rode in a sleigh drawn by 6 reindeer. In Spain and Poland and Portugal, it is the wise men who bring gifts to the children. In Russia, Babushka brings the gifts. Legend has it that Babushka misdirected the wise men when they were seeking Jesus, and that when the Holy Family came to her seeking shelter during their flight to Egypt, she refused them. She forever journeys through Russia on Christmas Eve, knocking on doors so that she may enter and see if the Christ child may live there. After looking at a sleeping child, she slips the toy under his pillow and then hastens away on her search for the Christ child, whom she has never found. In Italy, it is La Befana who brings gifts to children. Like the Russian Babushka, La Befana was believed to have had the chance to travel with the wise men, but did not go, and she has since constantly traveled searching for the Christ child. The children know her as a sort of good fairy, and hang their clothes where she may find them and fill the pockets with candy or gifts. In Greece, St. Basil distributes the gifts, arriving on his Christmas ship, which is loaded with toys and goodies. In whatever incarnation he or she may take, or in whatever disguise, Santa Claus or one of his multi-personalityed equivalents is undoubtedly one of the most universal of Christmas symbols today.
You better watch out, you better not cry, better not call, I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town.
You're making another mess and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake.
In 1979, Paul Froiland wrote one of the best, most complete compilations of the life and legend of St. Nicholas for TWA Ambassador magazine. It remains, in spite of its light-hearted tone and humor, a very well-researched biographical piece, and I would like to share his work with you now. This is Santa Claus, A Dossier, by Paul Froiland. Original name, St. Nicholas. Birth, Patara in southwestern Turkey, near the end of the 3rd or beginning of the 4th century. Offices held, Bishop of Myra in southwestern Turkey, early 4th century until death. Promotions, canonized as a saint of the Catholic Church in the 9th century. Demotions, St. Nicholas Day was dropped from the calendar in 1969 by Pope Paul VI, celebration made optional in the Roman Catholic Church. Death, December 6, 342 A.D. Reports of death were greatly exaggerated. Charitable gifts. During Nicholas' youth, a nobleman in his neighborhood lost his fortune. The nobleman's 3 daughters offered their virtue to help their father recoup his fortune. Nicholas overheard this, and for 3 evenings running, he made night deposits of 1 large bag of gold per night through the nobleman's window, thus saving the young women from disgrace. Legends about charitable gifts. The above story became embellished in the repeated telling to the extent that Nicholas was reported to have hurled the 3 bags of gold down the chimney instead of through the window, and that the bags landed in the young women's stockings hanging to dry by the fire. Interesting fact connected with charitable gifts. The 3 gold balls that later came to symbolize pawn shops represented the 3 bags of Nicholas's gold. Health history. As an infant, Nicholas reputedly refused to nurse during the fast days of the church. Prison record. Imprisoned by Emperor Diocletian for religious reasons in the 4th century. Released by Emperor Constantine for religious reasons in the 4th century. Work history. A. Amateur sleuth and miracle worker. While Nicholas was bishop, 3 scholars were hacked to death by an innkeeper in his diocese, who stuffed the remains in pickle barrels. Nicholas pieced both the crime and the scholars together, indicting the innkeeper and restoring life to the scholars, who showed no ill effects afterwards except continually smelling of brine. B. Amateur socialist and miracle worker. During a famine, Bishop Nicholas stopped grain ships bound for Alexandria and begged sailors to donate some grain to the poor. The sailors did, and their grain was later miraculously restored, enough to last them for 2 years. C. Amateur hot tub troubleshooter and miracle worker. While Nicholas was passing through a town, a woman with a small baby suddenly heard people cheering and ran out to investigate, unwittingly leaving her infant sitting in a tub of water over an open fire ready for his bath. By the time she remembered the baby, she was sure it was too late and that, at the very minimum, all the vitamins would be boiled out of the child. She asked Nicholas for a miracle, and when she returned, the baby had been brought to a furious boil, but was unharmed, popping bubbles with his fingers. Medical distinctions. After his death, Nicholas' tomb gave forth an oil that was reputedly both fragrant and curative. Travel after death. In 1807, the country that is now Turkey was in danger of being overrun by Turks. Christians of the Western Church, fearing that St. Nicholas' tomb would be destroyed, sent a delegation of 47 men to translate, a polite word for steal, the body of St. Nick and bring it to Bari, Italy. When the translators arrived, they found the tomb guarded by 4 monks. The 47 men then explained, in an excess of holy burning desire, that they wanted to take the body back with them. The monks were horrified. The 47 men then explained that the Pope had had a dream that year, in which St. Nicholas appeared to him, asking him, please, to send some men over to transport him from Myra to Bari. The monks stubbornly refused to be convinced by this logic. Finally, a scuffle broke out, during which a glass vial of the holy oil that seeped from St. Nicholas' tomb fell off of a low column onto the marble floor and was not broken. The men from Bari took this as an irrefutable sign that Nicholas was on their side. Who could argue with such demonstrable proof? And they tied up the four monks, cracked open the tomb, and carried the body off to Bari. Transportation. Saint Nick, in his post-mortem appearances, originally rode a white horse and carried three bags of gold with him. Later, as the price of gold rose, he was reduced to carrying bags full of fruit and toys. In the 1700s, he attached a wagon to the white horse. In 1821, he exchanged the horse for a team of eight reindeer. In 1841, he took the wheels off his wagon and made it into a sleigh. In 1939, he added a ninth reindeer with a bulbous nose named Rudolph. Professional associates. In Europe, throughout the Middle Ages, Saint Nick was accompanied by a demonic monster named Black Pieter, who carried a bag full of birch switches with which to flog naughty children. Black Pieter was also known as Black Piet, or in America as Black Pete. He accompanied Saint Nick until 1946, when his option was not renewed. Beginning in 1876, Santa began employing dwarfs to help him in the manufacture of goodies. Gradually, they came to be called elves instead. Aliases. Santa Claus. Corruption of the Teutonic Sankt Herklaas, meaning Holy Saint Nicholas. In January 1808, Washington Irving, in his journal Salmagundi, mentioned, quote, the noted Saint Nicholas, vulgarly called Santa Claus, close quote. Loose women associated with. In Holland, a girl of Sinterklaas is a loose woman. Length of temporary annual employment. Before the Reformation, St. Nick arrived on December 6th and presided over revelry until January 4th. During the Reformation, it became a punishable offense for an adult to observe St. Nicholas Day, but not for a child. From 1800 to 1860 in America, there was confusion as to whether Santa Claus came on Christmas or New Year's Day. In 1865, Christmas was declared a national holiday in the United States, and it was generally held thereafter that Santa came on Christmas Eve. Litigation. In 1936, Judge Michael A. Musmano of the Allegheny County Criminal Court in Pennsylvania ruled that doubters of Santa Claus would be held in contempt of court. Noted correspondence. September 19, 1897. Virginia O'Hanlon, 115 West 95th Street, New York City, wrote to the New York Sun asking affirmation of the existence of Santa. December 24, 1901, Edsel Ford, no address given, requested a pair of roller skates and a book. Literature about. December 23, 1823, a visit from St. Nicholas, often called The Night Before Christmas, was anonymously published in the Troy, New York Sentinel. In 1837, Clement Clark Moore claimed authorship. Later, the descendants of one Henry Livingston, Jr. claimed that he had written it. It is still hotly disputed, and descendants on both sides do not exchange Christmas cards. 1809, Washington Irving published The Knickerbocker History, which contained 24 allusions to Santa Claus. 1870, Bret Hart wrote How Santa Claus Came to Simpson's Bar. Portraits. 1837, depicted with cape, high black boots, and ermine-trimmed red outfit by an anonymous artist. 1841, depicted in the newspaper Brother Jonathan, wearing knickerbockers and smoking a pipe. 1844, depicted in The New Mirror with pipe, white beard, and bag of toys. 1866, depicted by Thomas Nast as a huge, merry, fat man, slightly narrower than a chimney. Impersonation by U.S. Presidents by Benjamin Harrison, sometime between 1889 and 1893. Songs about. In 1947, there were 22 new songs written, with the first two words being Santa Claus. Towns named after. Santa Claus, Indiana, population 426. Santa Claus, Georgia, population 5. Current home. Since the 1860s, a resident of the North Pole. Zip code 99701. Much has been written about the greed, covetousness, manipulation, discontent, and depression associated with the American version of the Christmas celebration. Without doubt, every newspaper in this country will, at some time between now and New Year's Day, publish a story about the increased numbers of suicides that accompany the holiday season, and many explanations and attempts at solutions will be offered. Psychologists and psychiatrists will tell us that the disturbance in one's psyche at Christmas time is caused by an irreconcilable conflict between positive expectations and negative reality, that people become depressed and suicidal when the peaceful, bountiful, and picturesque Currier and Ives fantasy that is presented as the spirit of the season doesn't jive with the traffic jams, discourteous store clerks, economic distress, pressure of obligations, forced social activities, bickering relatives, overloaded schedules, and every imaginable hassle associated with the actual execution of the Christmas ritual. These so-called experts will make sure that we know and understand all about holiday stress, and will suggest that if we just lower our expectations and reduce our social activities, we might survive the month of December without taking our own life. I think it is much simpler than that. Dealing with the American version of Christmas requires a recognition of the difference between happiness and joy. Happiness is always dependent on external things, tangible things, possessions, other people, situations, and conditions. Happiness comes and goes, its downside dependent on how much of a victim we feel ourselves to be at any given moment. But joy is an inside job. It's a spiritual thing, never dependent on the external. Joy speaks of an inner contentment, a freedom, by choice, from the manipulations of the world and its darkness. Joy is, quite simply, as St. Paul writes in Galatians, a fruit of the Spirit. Sometimes you just have to let go of the traditions and customs of this manic, driving, overwhelming holiday hysteria and get back to simple joy, wherein is great liberty of heart. And it is by returning to the simplicity of the biblical account of the birth of Jesus Christ, without its excess baggage of paganism, wrong teaching, doctrines of men, and sheer nonsense, that the observance of the event regains its peace, significance, and dignity. Ladies and gentlemen, the birth of Jesus Christ according to the Gospel of Luke.
And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn.
Amen.
there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. The angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men.
Angels, we have ever high, sing in
As the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. Came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger.
Thank you.
when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. They that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and may God bless you and yours with his comfort and joy.